tries to remember shutting off the lamp beside her bed. That's when she feels the first prickle of warning crawling across the back of her neck. There's a whiff of stale smoke, of sour sweat and old beer. She barely has time to register that she isn't alone when she feels a hand wind through her damp hair and she's yanked backward. As she gathers her breath to scream, a second hand clamps down over her mouth and nose, cutting off her air. She kicks and flails, but it's no good. She's being dragged across the room, her towel lost somewhere in the dark. Her head slams against the headboard as she's shoved down onto the bed, and a burst of blue light blooms inside her skull. And then there are more hands, fastened over her mouth, pinning her wrists, prying her legs apart. There are two of them, she realizes sickeningly, two sets of hands pawing at her. The reality of what's about to happen, of what is happening, is almost too much to grasp. She can't move, can't breathe, can't scream. Someone is on top of her, a faceless shadow in the darkness, crushing the breath from her lungs as a sweaty hand fumbles between their bodies. And then there's a piercing between her thighs, a rend up the center of her that feels as if she's being split in two. For a moment, she's terrified she'll be sick, that she'll choke on her own vomit because of the hand over her mouth. There's a brief battering, a sickening spell of gasping and bucking, and then finally, a collapse of heavy, sticky flesh against hers. She has no idea how much time passes as she lays there, pinned to the mattress, trying to breathe through the fingers still pressed to her face. But eventually, the weight lifts away. There's a rasp, and then a flare of light, the brief flame of a disposable lighter. And for the first time, she can make out Terry Blevins' face hovering above her, slack-jawed and slick with sweat.
"You want a turn, bro?"
he asks thickly, still straddling Christy Lynn as he smokes.
"I'll hold her.
Let's just get out of here before the old man wakes up."
It's Todd, the younger brother, the one who has her mouth covered and her wrists pinned. He sounds scared, as if he's just realized what they've done.
"Come on, man. She's right here. Or are you scared?"
"I ain't scared,"
Todd grunts sullenly.
"Just don't want to."
There's a moment, a fraction of an instant, when the pressure over her mouth goes slack. She wrenches her head free and opens her mouth to scream. The sound is cut short as an open palm connects with her cheek. Lights dance, and she tastes blood.
"Hold her still, dumbass,"
Terry growls at his brother. He sucks on his cigarette again, then aims the smoke at Christy Lynn's face.
"As for you, you stuck-up little bitch, you're going to lay there and listen. Got it?"
The grip on her wrists tightens again, and her fingers begin to go numb. She lies still and dazed, tears leaking from the corners of her eyes.
"You ain't gonna tell anybody about this,"
Terry says, with vicious softness, his face so close she can smell the beer on his breath.
"You're gonna pretend it never happened. 'Cause if you don't, if you even think about making any trouble, we're coming back."
He leans closer and then takes another pull from the cigarette. The tip glows hot orange in the dark, sinister and coming closer. So close, she can feel the heat of it against her cheek. She closes her eyes and struggles to pull away. She isn't expecting the blinding sting that suddenly sears the underside of her wrist. She begins to buck and thrash, anything to get free. But there's another slap, and then another sting as he presses the cigarette to her flesh again. Somewhere above her head, Todd lets out a groan.
"Jesus, Terry, leave her alone. You got what you wanted?"
"Shut the hell up, boy,"
Terry barks.
"I ain't done."
He leans in then, crushing the cigarette out against her wrist, holding it there until the reek of burning flesh fills her nostrils.
"Now you remember what we talked about,"
he slurs menacingly close to her ear.
"Not a word, or I'll be back. And next time, I won't be nice."
When Christy Lynn finally eases herself up off the bed, she isn't sure if 1 hour has passed or 4. She has wept herself dry and knows what she has to do. She has $17 to her name, the last of her tips from the donut shop. Not nearly enough. But she can't stay. She dresses in the dark, ignoring her wrist and the dull ache between her thighs. She empties her backpack. She won't be needing her school books. Then rolls up a pair of jeans, a t-shirt, and a denim jacket and stuffs them inside. It's all she can fit in the backpack, but she's afraid her duffel will be too heavy and too conspicuous. Her hand is on the knob when she remembers the envelope in the stand beside her bed. It's a silly thing to care about at a moment like this, a meaningless trinket. But somehow, she can't bear to leave it behind. After retrieving the envelope, she folds it into her back pocket, slides her pack up onto her shoulder, and steps out into the hall. She holds her breath as she creeps down the stairs. In the living room, Dennis Hawley is still snoring in his faux leather recliner, his face flickering an eerie shade of blue in the glow from the TV. She eyes the front door, then decides not to risk waking him. Instead, she turns down the hall and tiptoes into the Hawley's bedroom. On the dresser is a wallet, a handful of change, a set of car keys. For a split second, she thinks about the Pathfinder parked in the garage, but quickly discards the idea. She settles for the wallet instead, hoping it contains some cash, then moves to the window near the bathroom. It takes only a moment to slide the sash up and kick out the screen, then throw a leg over the sill and drop down into the hydrangeas. In the east, the sky has gone pink, the stars already winking out. The sun will be up soon, and by the time it is, she'll be far away from the Blevins brothers. 44. Christy Lynn stared down at her hands, clenched and bone white. I've never told anyone about that night. Not even Stephen. I thought I was past it. Then I met Iris. When Retta told me she could end up in foster care, it was like someone kicked in the door to my memory. Everything started seeping back in. Only this time, my story was all jumbled up with hers, until I couldn't tell the two apart. My past seemed like her future. And you felt like you had to fix it, Wade said gently. Yes. I wanted to believe the trust would be enough, that Stephen's money would protect Iris from the things I'd gone through. But today, when Ray showed up, I realized money won't change anything. She'll have nice things and go to a good school, maybe even an Ivy League college if that's what she wants. But all the money in the world won't buy her what she really needs. What's that? A mother. The ache was in the back of her throat. Guilt mingled with bottomless grief. I've been in Iris's shoes. I know what it's like to be a little girl and have that empty place in your life. That's why I fell apart when Retta asked me to take her. Because I can't give her that. I can't be that. Wade's hands closed over hers, warm, firm. I don't know a woman who could. Not under these circumstances. Christy Lynn's head lifted sharply. It isn't about that, about Honey or Stephen or any of that. Then what is it about? A promise I made a long time ago. To myself. I've always known I wasn't cut out for the soccer mom thing. Mothers like mine make lousy role models. And then there's the whole genetic crapshoot. Either way, I wasn't risking it. If it's any consolation, I think you were worried for nothing. Maybe, but the statistics aren't good, and I'm not wired to feel things the way other women do. It's like I skipped that line at the factory. Wade stared at her open-mouthed. You can't be serious. Why can't I? Because in my entire life, I've never met anyone wired to feel things more deeply than you do. And I'm absolutely stunned that you don't know that about yourself. I might buy that you're afraid to feel things deeply, but you can't help it. You're one of the most caring people I've ever met,
Maybe too caring, if there's such a thing.
Now maybe, Christy Lynn said, her eyes sliding away. But not always.
Not with my mother.
I did what I could. I made sure we ate and had clean clothes, but she got to where she couldn't keep a job. She started taking money from work, picking up men and bringing them home. When they arrested her, something in me shut down. I was just done. But she's my mother. I should have toughed it out, or at least gone back.
Once again, Wade looked stunned.
How can you say that? You were a kid, for God's sake, living a kind of hell most of us can't even imagine.
I was supposed to keep her from self-destructing, and I did for a while. Maybe if I had stayed...
She paused, briefly closing her eyes. The judge said I could go back if she cleaned up. That's why I stayed gone. Because going back seemed worse than anything that could happen to me on the streets. So I disappeared. I never called, never wrote, nothing. I did a search for her a few weeks ago. Before that, I didn't know if she was alive or dead.
Wade let out a long breath.
I'm starting to realize why you think it's your job to fix everything. You've been carrying the world around on your shoulders since you were a kid, and you're still doing it.
Christy Lynn hiked a shoulder. She didn't know if that was true or not, but if it was, she had certainly failed in spectacular fashion. Despite all her legal and financial maneuvering, Iris's future hadn't been improved in any meaningful way. And to top it all off, she had just run out on Retta in a full-blown panic. She lifted her eyes to Wade's, suddenly exhausted.
What can I say? I'm a profound and irreversible mess.
You're not a mess, profound or otherwise. You're just overwhelmed, and rightly so. It's been a bit of a day. We can either find a hotel close by so you can get some sleep, or I can take you home. Your choice.
Home, Christy Lynn said without hesitation. I want to go home. It was almost midnight when Wade finally pulled the Rover into the driveway. Christy Lynn was almost too exhausted to get out and go into the house. She tried to sleep on the way back, but every time she closed her eyes, Retta's words would float into her head.
You need each other.
It wasn't true. Iris needed a mother, someone who could mend a broken childhood. That wasn't her. In fact, it was becoming clear that she was still in need of mending herself. Wade grabbed her bag from the back seat, then came around to open her door. She felt strangely detached from her body as she got out, as if she'd left a part of herself back in Riddlesville.
You don't need to walk me to the door, she protested, when Wade took her arm and steered her toward the porch. I'm fine.
Hush.
He unlocked the door and let her overnight bag slide to the floor.
Why don't you take a bath, while I go scrape us up some dinner?
Christy Lynn checked her watch. It's almost midnight, and you drove the whole way back. You've got to be exhausted.
Maybe so, but as I recall, the last time either of us ate was 12 hours ago. And I'm not getting in my Jeep until you've been fed. Now go start the water, and let me do my job.
Your job? What job?
He smiled. Taking care of you.
It was true. He'd been taking care of her all day. And long before that, if she was honest.
Why do you do that?
Because you don't. And someone should.
There was a softness to his tone that unsettled her. A kindness that threatened to melt her into a puddle. It would be so easy to lean on him, to let him become a part of her life. But then what? How long before he realized he'd gotten involved with an emotional charity case and it all came apart? Because it would. Of course it would.
Look, I know you're trying to help and all, but I'm fine. Really, I don't need looking after.
Well, I do, he said, dismissing her words with a crooked grin. I'm starving, which is why I'm off to ransack your kitchen.
A half hour later, Christy Lynn padded back down the hall in a robe and a pair of slouchy socks. Wade had set up a pair of trays in the living room and was carrying two plates heaped with scrambled eggs and toast from the kitchen. He'd even made two mugs of tea. Her throat tightened absurdly at the sight. She couldn't remember the last time someone had fixed her scrambled eggs, or anything, really. "You didn't have to do this," she told him, feeling self-conscious. "I know you think I'm this big, helpless mess, but I've actually been taking care of myself for a long time."
"Yes, too long, as a matter of fact."
Wade dropped down onto the couch and picked up his fork.
"And I don't think you're helpless, but it's okay to let someone help you once in a while. Now eat. I tried to find a chick flick, but at this time of night, it's either the late night shows or infomercials."
"Thanks. I think I'd just as soon have the quiet." They ate in silence, Tolstoy purring contentedly between them on the couch. After the turmoil of the day, it felt slightly surreal to be doing something as mundane as eating eggs in her living room. She stole a glance at Wade, absently munching his toast, and thought about the way he had threatened to expose Ray if he so much as blinked in Iris's direction. She had never believed in white knights, but at that moment, Wade had become one. Tomorrow she would have to call Retta and make her understand the impossibility of what she was asking. But for now, it was enough to simply eat her eggs and not think about tomorrow. When she'd eaten her fill, she carried the dishes to the kitchen, then returned to fold up the trays. Wade lay slumped against the arm of the couch, head lolled back against the cushions. She stood looking at him, taking him in detail by detail, the slow rise and fall of his chest, the dusky stubble shadowing his jawline, the way the tiny lines around his eyes went smooth when his face was relaxed. As if he could feel her there, his eyes opened, heavy-lidded and golden. He said nothing as he looked at her. Neither did she, pinned by his gaze and the unsettling whirl of emotions that suddenly crept over her, warmth, gratitude, and trust. It was unfamiliar ground for her, and yet it couldn't be denied. Somehow, while she wasn't paying attention, this man had become part of her life, her safe port in a storm. "Thank you," she whispered, easing down beside him. "I don't know what I would have done without you today, or through any of this, really. I've never been good at letting people in, but somehow you're here, and I'm glad."
"I'm glad, too."
She didn't resist this time, when Wade reached for her hand and turned it palm up. She watched, as he traced a finger over the trio of small scars, then softly touched his lips to them.
"I'm sorry you've been through so much, but I'm glad you felt you could share it with me. In case no one's ever told you, you're quite remarkable."
The words had a strange effect on Christy Lynn, as if some invisible lock somewhere had suddenly sprung open, a sense of letting go, in this moment at least, of the fears that had kept her in check until now. But then, there had always been an inevitability to this moment. A bone-deep knowing that there would come a time when what lay between them would be forever changed. She groped for something to say, for some quick words to fill up the moment, to check the reckless direction of her thoughts. When she couldn't think of anything, she kissed him, tentatively at first, and then more deeply. Unspooling all the pent-up emotions of the day, he felt warm and solid, safe. It was a heady mix, and a frightening one. And yet she felt herself yielding to it, reaching for the thing she'd been holding at bay for so long. It was Wade who broke away, an abrupt severing that left Christy Lynn feeling suddenly unmoored. She stared at him, dazed. "What?"
"This is a bad idea, Christy Lynn," he said evenly, holding her at arm's length.
"Why?"
"Because you're tired, and you're emotional, and because I'm afraid you're confusing gratitude with something else right now."
"I'm not."
"I think you are. You might not remember, but the last time we went down this particular road, you made it abundantly clear that you weren't ready. And I made it clear that I don't want to be the guy who takes advantage of a friend. I don't think either of those things have changed, do you?"
"I don't know," she said softly. I wish I did, but I know I want to be with you tonight.
Christy Lynn.
Stay.
I shouldn't.
She leaned in, past the wavering defense of his outstretched arm, and gently grazed his lips.
Please.
With that simple word, all Wade's reservations seemed to fall away. His arm went round her, pulling her tight against him, his mouth moist and hungry as it closed over hers. After a moment, he pulled back, breath coming hard as he probed her gaze one last time.
You're sure?
I'm not sure of anything, except that I want this. Want you. Now. Neither spoke as Christy Lynn led him to her bedroom. Her hands trembled as she loosened her robe and let it slip from her shoulders. The seconds ticked heavily as she stood there, naked and trembling in the wash of moonlight from the open window, reveling in the feel of Wade's gaze moving over her. And yet there was a prickle of indecision, too, a tiny voice reminding her that it wasn't too late to stop this, now, before things went too far. Was she testing herself? Testing Wade? Or was it only forgetfulness she craved, a place to hide for the night, as she had once hidden herself in Stephen? She didn't know the answers, but suddenly, it didn't matter. She was reaching for him, and he for her. There was no more time for second-guessing. The contact came as a shock at first, all warm skin and hard angles against her bare flesh. She heard Wade's sharp intake of breath, and knew he felt it too. They had crossed that line, that fraction of an instant when it was still possible to retreat. She was clinging to him now, breath held, head thrown back, surrendering to the dizzying assault of his mouth along the ridge of her collarbone, the hollow at the base of her throat. Slowly, maddeningly, he teased his way up to her lips. Christy Lynn rose on tiptoe to meet the kiss, unable to ignore the sweet ache spreading to her limbs. She breathed his name and heard hers in return, a plea, a promise, and then suddenly they were falling, spilling onto moonlit sheets, a tangle of straining limbs and unleashed need. They lay quietly afterward, touching but not talking, slick but sated in a tangle of damp sheets. Christy Lynn lay with eyes closed, listening to the thrum of blood in her ears. Beside her, Wade's breathing was deep and even as he drifted toward sleep, the warmth of their lovemaking still radiating from his skin. He had touched her in a way she'd never been touched before, as if he'd been given a key to all the hidden places she'd been guarding so carefully, had broken her open and laid her bare. And now, as she lay reliving each exquisite moment, she knew she had made a terrible mistake. It was only a matter of time before Wade knew it too. She'd been willing, but not ready. Desperate to believe things had changed, that she had changed. But it wasn't true. The day's events had dredged up her past like slime from the bottom of a stagnant pond, a glaring reminder that trust was a dangerous thing. Her mother, the Hollies, Stephen, a trail of betrayal and broken promises. And now there was Wade. Except, in Wade's case, she was the one likely to prove dangerous, weighed down with emotional baggage, and a flight risk by nature. Without warning, Charlene Parker's face appeared, floating behind her closed lids like a specter on a movie screen. Dar's words were there too, disembodied in the darkness. Let the memories catch up to you. Perhaps it was time she did just that. She waited until she was sure Wade was asleep, before pushing back the covers and easing the bottom drawer of the nightstand open. In the moonlight, the envelope glowed an eerie white. She took it out, hesitating only a moment before grabbing the clothes she had discarded earlier and slipping out of the room. In the kitchen, she scribbled a hasty note and left it on the table. There was no nice way to explain leaving him in the middle of the night, but she had to say something. Wade, you were right. I wasn't ready. I'm so sorry. About everything. There's something I have to do. Please forgive me. C.L. It seemed terse when she read it back, cold and dismissive. But she didn't trust herself to wait until morning to explain where she was going. He might try to talk her out of it, and maybe he should. But this was something she needed to do, even if it came to nothing, which it probably would. It was time to stop hiding and face her past head-on, to lance the old wounds if she could, and drain 30 years of poison. Scooping the still-packed overnighter from the living room floor, she slipped out into the night, trying not to think about the moment Wade would wake up and find her gone. She stopped for coffee in Raleigh sometime around 9, then dug out her phone to pull up the site she'd used to find Charlene Parker's last known address. She groaned when she typed the information into her GPS. Still 3 hours to go. Suddenly, she began to question the sanity of what she was doing. She hadn't spoken to her mother in 6 years, hadn't seen her in more than 20. What did she hope to gain by poking at her past with a sharp stick? The smart thing, the sane thing, would be to go back to Sweetwater and clean up the mess she'd made with Wade. As if conjured, her cell phone rang. Wade's number flashed on the screen. She cringed, briefly considering letting the call go to voicemail, but that was the coward's way out. "Hello, Wade."
"What's going on, Christy Lynn? Where are you?"
"In Raleigh, on my way to South Carolina."
"You left me in your bed in the middle of the night to drive to South Carolina."
"I'm sorry."
"So your note said."
Christy Lynn blinked against the sudden sting behind her lids. "I wish I knew what else to say. Some other way to do this."
"To do what? What are you saying?"
"I'm saying we made a mistake, Wade. That I made a mistake. You were right. I wasn't ready. I'm never going to be ready."
"I'd say it's a bit late to be figuring that out."
"I didn't just figure it out. I've known it for a long time. In fact, I tried to warn you the first time you kissed me."
"Yes, you did," he replied stiffly. "Must learn to pay better attention. Though to set the record straight, it was you who made the first move last night, not me."
Christy Lynn smothered a groan, keenly aware of the irony. "You've been a good friend, Wade. A true friend. I don't know what else to say, except that it never should have happened."
"A friend," he repeated coolly. "Right."
His tone, clipped and frosty, stung more than she expected. Not that she hadn't deserved it. "I didn't mean it like that. I just meant... I never meant to hurt you, Wade."
"What's in South Carolina?"
The abrupt change of subject should have come as a relief, but didn't. "Answers, maybe? Or nothing at all? I don't know yet."
"You're going to try to find your mother, aren't you?"
"Yes."
"After 20 years, and all by yourself."
There was another long pause, as if he were taking time to frame his next words.
"I would have gone with you, you know. All you had to do was ask."
"All by myself is what I know, Wade. It's what I'm good at. Say what you want about Stephen, but even he figured that out. And it isn't about fixing anything. It's too late for that. It's about looking her in the eye, looking all of it in the eye, so I can finally stop reliving it and blaming myself for it. I know that doesn't make sense to you. You don't believe in looking back. And I tried that approach for years. But it hasn't worked. So I have to try something else. If I don't, nothing's ever going to change for me."
"Are you sure you want things to change?"
"Of course I do. You think I like the way things are now? The way I am? Afraid of making another mistake? Of hurting someone else? Of hurting you?"
"Let's leave me out of the equation for now, since you've apparently already done that. I just want you to think about what you're doing, and why you're doing it. This trip seems like a pretty spur-of-the-moment thing. Have you given any thought as to what happens when you get there? What you'll say to her if you find her?"
"I have no idea."
"Maybe you're not as ready to do this as you think."
The hard edges were gone from his voice now, replaced with something softer. "If I don't do it now,
I never will.
Look, I know you feel like you have to work through all of this on your own, Christy Lynn. And maybe you do. But I told you once that I'd wait. That hasn't changed.
Christy Lynn closed her eyes, hating the words she was about to utter.
And I told you I wasn't worth the wait. That hasn't changed either.
Christy Lynn,
I come with too many nevers, Wade. Too many doors it's too late to open.
And I'm behind one of those doors.
Yes, she said softly. I'm sorry.
Will I see you when you get back?
Christy Lynn swallowed past the fist-sized lump in her throat. She was trying to do the right thing, but he wasn't making it easy. She needed him to understand once and for all that they were a bad idea, that she was a bad idea.
Sweetwater's a small town, she said finally. We're bound to run into each other.
Right.
Wade.
Never mind. I get it. Good luck with your mom.
She felt a strange hollowness as she ended the call, as if she had just burned a bridge she might want to cross in the future. She tried to shake the feeling as she put the Rover in gear and pulled back onto the highway, telling herself it was for the best. There simply wasn't room in her heart right now for one more ache.
45. Walterboro, South Carolina, August 27th, 2017. The Dixie Court apartments weren't quite as depressing as Christy Lynn had imagined them, but they were close. The treeless grounds wore a vaguely blasted look, as if a bomb had been dropped years ago and the place had never recovered. And the squat, squarish brick buildings reminded her of a prison. It was Sunday, and the parking lot was nearly full, populated with older model cars, pocked with rust, or sporting mismatched fenders. At the far end of the lot, a grimy dumpster overflowed with trash, a cloud of flies humming greedily in the late August heat. Slowing the Rover to an idle, she scanned dirty apartment doors until she located number 13. Strains of Blake Shelton's "Kiss My Country Ass" drifted down from one of the upper-story windows. It took everything she had not to restart the engine and pull away. A little girl in a stained dress and bare feet stared at her wordlessly as she approached the door and lifted her hand to knock. The front windows were open. The curtains wadded into knots to let in the spongy summer air. She tried to peer in but could see nothing. The TV was on. The volume turned way up. Old Matlock reruns. She knocked again, harder this time, not sure her first attempt had been heard over the TV. Seconds later, the door pulled back a few inches. A pair of shrewd eyes peered out.
Yeah?
There was a moment of disorientation, of fractured memories coalescing around the cigarette-gruff voice and warily narrowed eyes. It was how she used to open the door when the rent was due, or when she owed money to one of her dealers.
Mama?
The door pulled back another few inches.
Christy Lynn?
It was the scar she noticed first, a puckered pink gash running from her right eye down to the corner of her mouth, tugging her upper lip into a perpetual half-smile. It was all Christy Lynn could do not to take a step back.
Yes, Mama, it's me.
The door pulled back the rest of the way, a pong of stale cigarette smoke drifting out to envelop her.
What in God's name?
I came to see how you were.
Why?
Christy Lynn stared at her, baffled by the one-word response, but the truth was, she didn't have an answer.
I honestly don't know.
You drove clear from Maine for no reason?
I live in Virginia now. Are you going to let me in?
Charlene seemed to give the question serious thought, but finally pulled back the door and stepped aside. It took Christy Lynn's eyes a moment to adjust to the dimness, but gradually she made out a small living room, with an even smaller kitchen and dinette off to the side. The furniture was worn and mismatched, the couch covered in a faded orange sheet. There was a box fan perched in one of the side windows, circulating sticky air in the cramped space.
A cigarette fumed in a chipped glass ashtray, overflowing with butts. Charlene reached past Christy Lynn to stub it out, then whisked a natural light can from the end table before clicking off the TV. Her eyes darted anxiously, as if seeing the place through her daughter's eyes, and for one terrible moment, Christy Lynn was reminded of the day she'd brought poor Linda Neely home.
"I've just made some tea," Charlene blurted awkwardly. "I'll get you a glass."
Christy Lynn followed her to the kitchen, where the smell of old beer and even older food greeted her. She tried not to count the empty beer cans in the sink, scattered among what looked like last night's dishes. There were 9.
"They're not all mine," Charlene told her, noting the direction of her daughter's gaze. "Some of them are Roger's. I'd have tidied up if I knew you were coming."
"I'm sorry," Christy Lynn said, dragging her eyes from the sink and then from the overflowing trash can in the corner. "I couldn't find a phone number for you."
"You know I never could stand a phone."
"No, especially when the bill collectors were calling." "Who's Roger?"
"He's my... we live together, going on 2 years now. Works for Tilden Lumber over in Ravenel."
She handed Christy Lynn a glass of tea.
"He's steady."
Christy Lynn's brows lifted. 2 years, and a job. As far as she knew, it was a first for both. So by her mother's standards, he probably was steady. Still, she refrained from voicing her thoughts. Charlene turned a hard eye on her.
"Why are you here, Christy Lynn, after all these years?"
"You're my mother," she said coolly. Charlene snorted as she turned away, heading for the living room and the half-smoked cigarette in the ashtray. She fumbled in her pocket for a disposable lighter and lit the crumpled end.
"I've always been your mother," she said,
blowing a plume of smoke at the ceiling.
"Never brought you around before."
There had been no indictment in the words, only a wary curiosity. For the first time, Christy Lynn allowed herself a closer study of her mother. She wore slippers and a limp cotton house dress, the missing top button exposing several inches of blade-thin collarbone. Her once dark hair was dull and brittle now, shot through with threads of gray, and her skin was deeply lined. But it was Charlene Parker's eyes that told the real tale. Once a deep and startling green, they had faded to a washed-out gray, as if the light in them had guttered out. Christy Lynn did the mental math. 52, or thereabouts. Far too young to look so used up. She'd been beautiful once, the kind of beautiful that turned heads. 1 million years ago.
"I know it's been a long time, Mama."
20 years. Christy Lynn dropped her eyes.
"Yes." "So why now?"
"I've been trying to forget you." The words had tumbled out unchecked. Christy Lynn regretted them the moment they were out. She watched as they hit their mark, the brief flash of pain in the dull gray eyes, the quick look away as her mother sank into a shabby velour recliner.
"That's what I get for asking, I suppose."
Christy Lynn perched on the edge of the couch with her tea. "I didn't mean it the way it sounded. My husband died, and I've been dealing with some things. A lot of memories keep coming up." Charlene reached for her hand, then drew back, as if she'd thought better of it.
"I saw the news about your husband on TV, and in the papers."
She shook her head as she stared at the dirty shag carpet between her slippers.
"Nasty business with that woman and all. Do you have... are there children?"
Christy Lynn shifted uncomfortably. "No, no children."
"Was that by choice?"
"Yes."
"Because of me?" she asked quietly.
"Because of how I was?" "Because I was afraid of how I'd be. I was afraid I'd..."
"End up a drunk?"
"Yes," Christy Lynn replied, holding her mother's gaze without flinching. "Or worse. I swore I'd never put a child through that." It was Charlene who looked away first, sighing as she shifted her attention to the glowing tip of her cigarette.
You were never like me. You were always good. Responsible. I'd have given anything to be a better mother to you.
No, Mama, you wouldn't. Not anything.
No, Charlene admitted, nodding. Not anything.
Christy Lynn put down her tea and reached into her purse for the envelope she had taken from her nightstand. Charlene looked on as she spilled the contents into her lap, then picked up the photo and held it out. Do you remember that day? You took me to the fair?
I remember.
And this? Christy Lynn held up the tarnished necklace, letting it dangle slowly from her fingers. Do you remember this? You were wearing one just like it in the picture.
The other half of mine.
Her voice had fallen to a near whisper.
You kept it all these years.
Christy Lynn ignored the question. Do you remember what you said when you put it on me? You said we'd never take them off. But you did take yours off.
I didn't realize it meant so much to you. It was just a cheap trinket.
It wasn't the necklace, Mama. It was the promise you made when you gave it to me. The promise you broke when you pawned it. She paused to gather up the contents of the envelope and tuck them away. That's when I knew the drugs were more important than me. And how easy it is to make promises you don't intend to keep.
Charlene nodded dully. I see. It's Judgment Day.
Go on, then. I can take it.
This isn't about judging you. It's about wiping the slate clean, my slate. For years, I managed to keep all the bad stuff locked away. To pretend it happened to some other girl, someone who didn't exist anymore. But some things have happened lately, things that make me realize I can't do it anymore. It's like a door opened, and all the stuff, the way you were, the way we lived, all came spilling out. The drugs, the evictions, the men. And then seeing you in the hospital with your face all stitched up. You going to jail, and me shipped off to the county.
She broke off abruptly, reaching for her tea. She wasn't thirsty, but she needed something to hide behind.
Foster care, Charlene said, drawing the words out slowly. Was it terrible?
Christy Lynn took another sip of tea, staring at the 20-year-old burns on her wrist. She had come to exorcise her demons, to force her mother to own her past and acknowledge the damage she had done. But suddenly the words wouldn't come. What would it serve to dredge up Terry Blevins now, except perhaps to pass her demons on to her mother? And it was clear that Charlene Parker still had enough demons of her own.
I ran away, she said finally, leaving out the why. I lived on the street for 2 years until I turned 18.
Charlene's eyes filled with tears, the scarred corner of her mouth puckering in a lopsided grimace.
They told me. When they couldn't find you, they came to me. They thought I might have heard from you. They should have known I'd be the last person you'd come to.
Christy Lynn wasn't sure why her mother was crying. Were they tears of self-reproach or self-pity? The line between the two had always been blurry, and the years had done nothing to make that line clearer.
I didn't come here to make you cry, or to make you apologize. In fact, today isn't about you at all. It's about me looking you in the eye and facing what happened back then, about reminding myself what I've been through, and that I was strong enough to survive it. I'm here because I want closure, because I need it,
so I can finally stop punishing myself.
Charlene had been about to light another cigarette. Her head came up as the lighter fell from her hand.
Why in God's name would you punish yourself?
For leaving you, Christy Lynn said thickly. For running away and leaving you alone all those years ago. I never knew if you were...
She looked away, blinking back tears she had vowed not to shed.
Charlene shifted in the recliner until she was facing Christy Lynn, her cigarette forgotten.
Now you listen to me, baby girl. You did right to leave, and you did right to stay gone. Look at you, where you've ended up, what you've made of yourself, strong, respectable, beautiful. Do you think for a minute it would have turned out like that if you'd stayed around to babysit me?
Christy Lynn dragged in a breath.
There's no way to know.
Charlene's gray eyes flared.
Yes, there is, and we both know it. You think I don't know what it was like for you, having to take care of me when it should have been the other way around? You think there's a day I don't remember coming home drunk out of my mind, stoned out of my mind, passing out, or worse? I do. I remember it all. It's amazing what comes back to you when you lay off the stuff. Things you wish to God you could forget. Hell, you were better off on your own than with a mother like me, a boozer and a junkie. It's not an easy thing to say, especially to your own daughter. But there it is.
Christy Lynn stared at the rapidly melting ice in her tea as she waited for her emotions to right themselves.
Are you? I'm off the drugs. All of it.
But you're still drinking.
She smiled grimly. Old habits die hard. I had to pick one or the other, and I figured I was less likely to kill myself with a bottle than with a needle.
It was a strange conversation to be having. They had never actually talked about the booze and the drugs. They were just a fact, something to be tiptoed around whenever possible.
Was it after you got out of jail? Is that when you got clean?
No, not then. Not even to get you back.
I wanted to. I did. I just couldn't.
I've only been clean about 4 years. So you see, hanging around waiting for me to become Mother of the Year would have been a waste of time. For a long time, years, I wondered what had happened to you, if you'd turned out all right. And then one day, I saw your picture in one of those celebrity magazines, married to some hotshot writer, and I knew you'd be fine. No thanks to me, of course, but I was so proud and happy for you, and so ashamed when I had to call and ask you for money that time. I said it was for rent, but it wasn't.
You used it to buy drugs?
No.
Charlene shook her head as she fumbled in her lap for her lost lighter.
But I used it to pay off my guy, which amounts to the same thing. But that was the last time. That's when I decided to get clean. Not because I was afraid of ending up dead in an alley somewhere. Because I couldn't bear the thought of ever having to dial your number again.
There were tears in her eyes. She blinked, and they spilled down her cheeks, leaving a pair of shiny tracks down her ruined face. Christy Lynn was quiet for a time. In spite of everything, all the recklessness and neglect and shame, it was hard to see her mother this way.
Do you need money? She asked quietly.
Or anything? Charlene managed the ghost of a smile.
No, honey. And even if I did, I couldn't take it from you. Things are tight, and this is no palace, but we manage.
And you? She reached for her cigarettes,
only to find the pack empty. I know it hasn't been long since the accident, but are you happy? I own a bookstore now. It keeps me busy, and I do some editing on the side. A crease formed between Charlene's brows. Busy and happy aren't the same thing. I meant, is there someone in your life? Someone who makes you happy?
Christy Lynn shifted uncomfortably. She found her mother's sudden concern for her happiness grating.
You saw the papers, she replied stiffly. I'm not cut out for happy. Busy is going to have to do. And I prefer being alone. Fewer complications.
The unscarred corner of Charlene's mouth turned down.
You were always a terrible liar.
It isn't a lie, and I didn't come here for a lecture on happiness.
No, Charlene said flatly. I don't suppose you did. Have you said what you came to say, then? Or is there more?
Once again, Christy Lynn's eyes crept to the scars on her wrist. Yes, there was more. Much more. But there was no point in raking through it. She'd done what she needed to do, seen what she needed to see.
Yes, she said evenly. I have.
Charlene stood abruptly and crossed to the door.
Then it's time for you to go.
Christy Lynn stared at her, stunned by the curt dismissal.
It's best for us both, really, Charlene said, with a fleeting smile. Roger will be home soon. He works a half day on Sundays, and I don't want to have to explain you. He knows all the rest of it. But I couldn't bear him knowing the kind of mother I was. I've done a lot in my life that I'm ashamed of, but nothing compares to the way I screwed up with you.
Christy Lynn came slowly to her feet, reaching into the side pocket of her purse for a pen and a business card.
I'll leave you my cell, in case you need anything.
She scribbled down the number and held it out, but Charlene shook her head.
Thank you, but no. We're done, you and I, and have been for a long time. You said it yourself. You came because you wanted to forget me, and now you can. At least I hope you can. Consider it a gift. God knows I've never given you much else, except maybe a promise I never kept. So go. Forget.
There was a heaviness in Christy Lynn's chest that she hadn't expected as she moved to the door.
But I can't just go, Charlene urged, pulling back the door to let in a blast of Carolina heat. Please. You have a life, Christy Lynn. Maybe it's not perfect, but it's a life you can be proud of, which is more than I can say. I'm lucky to be alive after the way I've lived mine. I don't deserve to get my little girl back.
Won't you at least let me do something for you?
You were always smart. Be smart now. Go back to Virginia and don't look back. That's what you can do for me.
Christy Lynn stood there a moment, but couldn't think of anything to say. Finally, she dropped the card on the coffee table and slipped through the open door. She had come for closure, but as she started the engine and drove away, all she felt was numb. Unable to put a name to the dull ache in her throat, as she watched the Dixie Court apartments recede in her rearview mirror. 46. Christy Lynn watched as Missy wove her way through the crowd, pausing to throw Marco a wave and a wink. It was Taco Tuesday, and the place was jammed with the after-work crowd, unwinding with cheap tacos and full-priced margaritas. She wished she'd remembered before suggesting it. Her mood was anything but festive.
My God, Missy said, as she flounced into her chair. You look terrible.
Gee, thanks.
You know what I mean. You look like you should be home in bed.
Christy Lynn reached for a tortilla chip and munched it absently.
My next stop,
Promise. Thanks for meeting me tonight. I just didn't feel like being by myself. You know, I never turn down a margarita. Do you want some food? We could order nachos and share. Christy Lynn nodded. Missy waved Marco over and placed their order, then turned back to Christy Lynn. So how was it? Your mother, I mean. You said you found her?
It was awful.
Oh, honey, I'm so sorry. She says she's off the drugs, and I think I believe her. But the sink was full of beer cans. She was so beautiful once, the kind of woman men stopped and stared at. But she looked all worn down, like life had broken her. I'm not surprised after everything you've told me. At least she's off the stuff. That's something at least. I suppose. She's got a boyfriend, Roger. They've been together 2 years. That's all I know about him. Oh, and he works for a lumber company. So did you talk about everything? I did most of the talking. It was all very civil. No fireworks, and not too many tears. How did you leave it? She told me to leave and not come back. Missy blinked several times. I don't understand. I think she was ashamed. It was like she couldn't wait to get rid of me. I guess that makes sense. It had to be hard seeing you after all these years, remembering how she was back then. Honestly, I expected her to hit you up for money. I offered. She wouldn't take it. She said taking money from me was one of the lowest points in her life. She claims it's why she finally got clean. Are you going to do what she asked and stay away? Christy Lynn squeezed her lemon into her tea and gave it a stir. I don't know. She meant what she said. She really doesn't want me to try and see her again. I left my number, but she didn't even want that. Then maybe you should honor that. Maybe. Marco dropped off Missy's margarita, promising to be back soon with her nachos. Missy discarded her straw and took a long sip, licking salt from her lips. Sounds like she's at least trying to take responsibility for the choices she's made. That's a good thing, right? I guess. So are you glad you went? Christy Lynn picked up another chip, then put it back down. I don't know what I feel, or if I even accomplished anything by going. I felt like I was talking to a stranger. The woman I remember was never much of a mother. She was always too drunk or high or freaked out to think about me. And suddenly there she was, being all noble and self-sacrificing, asking me if I was happy. And you told her what? That I had a bookstore that kept me busy. Is that the same thing? Christy Lynn rolled her eyes. Now you sound like her. It's a valid question, honey. I know there's a ton going on in your life right now, but at some point, you really are going to have to give the happy thing a try. The nachos arrived just as Christy Lynn was about to respond. She waited for Marco to disappear, then spread her napkin in her lap. Speaking of having a ton going on, there's sort of been a development. Well, several, actually. Missy set down her margarita, a little warily. I'm almost afraid to ask. Retta asked me to adopt Iris. To adopt? Oh my God, are you kidding? Where did that come from? It's a long story, but the short version is that Honey's brother has suddenly decided to play the doting uncle now that his niece comes with a trust fund. He showed up and made a big scene about suing for custody. Retta was beside herself. That's why she asked, because she's terrified, and there's no one else. What did you say? What do you think I said? I said no. I'm just getting used to the idea of having a cat. Can you see me raising a little girl? That little girl? I can, actually. And apparently, so can Retta. I can't, Missy. And you know why I can't. And it's not about her being Stevens. Seeing my mother, remembering just how wrong things can go.
I just can't.